is the Hagman and Hagman Report. HagmanReport.com, that's our home base. That's for news, information, analysis, HagmanReport.com. Check us out there. Of course, you can follow us on social networking for as long as that lasts, until we get kicked off for mentioning the truth. Of course, you know, fake news not welcome on social networking. But that, then no worries, because, you know, you're dumbed down by well, I guess most millennials can't go beyond like 144 characters. It messes with their synapses somewhere up there, right? We have a great, for the rest of the remainder of the show, we've got a special guest for you. I like this guy. Andrew Kerr. Have you heard of him? You have to have heard of him. He is an investigative reporter at the citizensaudit.com. Now, folks, I don't care if you're in Europe or listening to this in Australia, and Billy, thanks for checking in from London. What are you doing up so late? and also Mary Lou from New South Wales. Thanks again too, where it's in the afternoon. But anyway, Andrew Kerr is an investigative reporter at thecitizensaudit.com, thecitizensaudit.com. Bookmark that site and check it out. Tasked with producing original research about pressing issues in the news, and he does a great job. You talk about he just does a great job. We and I want to thank John Robertson for making this interview and others possible. John Robertson has done such a terrific job.
And also I want to thank Bill McIntosh from OCASO Media. Bill McIntosh.
Yep.
I spell it because when John says it, and he told me it's okay, asso or something. Okay,
you all right?
Yeah, no,
I probably butchered that.
But Bill McIntosh, thank you for setting that up.
All right, yeah, and we there's a lot of information to get into that Mr. Kerr has, and he is approaching the news, the pressing issues of the news, in particular. For example, David Brock, in a very unique but a very effective way. We're going to be getting to Mr. Kerr just momentarily. I just want to ask each and every one of you out there, and guys, this is especially for you guys. If you are looking, have you done your Christmas shopping? If you haven't, I've got something for you. OmahaSteaks.com. OmahaSteaks.com. Guys, this is a great gift for family members. Think about this. Your boss, the people you work with, you work for, you work around, your friends, neighbors, whatever, omahasteaks.com. And in the search bar, you got to put HH right away. But with the click of a mouse, you can get your Christmas shopping done. If you're struggling to find that perfect gift for someone who has it all, the holidays are fast approaching. So order gifts for everyone on your list with just a simple click of the mouse. Go to omahasteaks.com and put right away in the search bar HH. There you will find all sorts of specials, especially for the Hagman and the Hagman Report listeners. Here is the perfect gift, the family gift pack. This is a gift pack that I have sent and actually purchased it for our own household. How would you like to get for under $50? Listen to this. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts. I could stop right there. And to me, there's like the $50. But let me go on. 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, a 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, 4 potatoes au gratin for the sides, 4 caramel apple tartlets for dessert, 1 Omaha steak seasoning packet, which makes the beef just so flavorful. And then, of course, with this order, you will get 4 additional kielbasa sausages free for under $50. That's $49.99. It's actually a 77% savings. It was $215.90, but for the listeners of the Hagman and Hagman Report, it is on sale right now for $49.99. This is the best. And Omaha Steaks, too, when you're there, they've got over 500 gourmet gift ideas, the highest quality cuts of meat and ingredients, one-of-a-kind flavor, convenient, quick shopping for those of you on... Well, it's a fantastic way to shop. Again, omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar, omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar. Be a hero for your family and friends and You're gonna, you'll thank me later, especially you guys out there. You'll thank me later. All right.
Joining us, now and will be with us till the end of the program is Andrew Kerr, an investigative reporter and founder of the Citizen Audit, thecitizenaudit.com, tasked with producing original research about pressing issues in the news. And prior to this, he worked several years in the IT business, acquiring extensive knowledge of data management and analytics building off a degree in computer science.
He's a smart and articulate cookie, let me tell
the
you.
The mission of CitizensAudit.com is to empower Americans to hold their government accountable. Mr. Kerr, welcome to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And folks, he's on video. So if you go to our YouTube channel, live YouTube channel, you can see him. He's a good-looking guy, young man, and a very adept and very effective citizen investigator. Andrew, dominating the news is, of course, Pizzagate. And it's a very important story, as we have covered this week. You want to touch on that a little bit, where you're at with your investigation on this and what you're seeing?
Well, I haven't been looking into Pizzagate directly. To be completely honest, I haven't really spent much time at all looking into it, since there's a lot of other individuals that are devoting their time to it. The angle that I've been taking ever since mid-July, following James Comey's announcement back during the election, saying that he wasn't going to recommend charges against Hillary Clinton for email server. So yeah, we're talking a couple months ago. I got this feeling in my head that, okay, well, Hillary Clinton is immune from anything, and so I decided to look at her supporting cast, most prominently David Brock. And I've been doing an extensive amount of research on David Brock and his organizations, the way that that he does his business, and the amount of organizations that are present in his Washington, D.C. office, and the way that they pass money from one to another, the way that his organizations illegally coordinated with the Clinton campaign. And it just so happens that a lot of the key players I've been looking into since July are also some names that I'm seeing pop up during the Pizzagate investigation. And the way that I'm looking at it is, this is indirectly related, but it's kind of like Al Capone. Notorious gangster was caught not paying his taxes. That's really boring in comparison to all the stuff that he did, but it could be the same thing here. The Pizzagate is an absurd story.
Yes.
Even if it was completely true, it's ridiculous, to be quite honest. And it's a really hard pill for people to swallow, but I think that not properly paying taxes or fraudulent money transfers, that's a lot easier to swallow. And and my whole angle has been pushing to get an official audit of Media Matters for America in particular. And I think that could blow this whole thing whole wide open if the IRS and government agencies could finally, look at a granular level at these organizations, and then, it could just snowball from there.
That's a very good point, because at the epicenter, but within this subject of Pizzagate is James Elefantis. And he's one of the players, of many, but his significant other, his boyfriend or former boyfriend, of course, is David Brock. And David Brock comes up in the conversation in the citizen investigative reports on this subject. You, and I applaud what you've done. And folks, go to the citizensaudit.com page and just check out his, Andrew Kerr's latest reports. But tell us, who is David Brock? Because you've done some great work on this, using this angle. Who's David Brock?
Yeah, so he, interesting story. He started out as a conservative reporter. He wrote the real story of Anita Hill, and was commissioned to write a hit piece on the Clintons. But instead of producing that hit piece, he came out a pro-Clinton ally and became one of both Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's staunchest allies during her 2008 and 2016 race. He founded Media Matters for America in 2004, tasked with correcting conservative misinformation in the media. which, you know, to be completely honest, correcting misinformation in the media, that's an honorable mission statement. But it, very quickly, Media Matters just became a purely political organization, which is concerning, especially considering that they are a tax-exempt organization. But then he also has a number of other nonprofit organizations, all aligned to progressive causes. And he actually has three super PACs that are running out of his office space in Washington, D.C. So he actually, I actually identified 14 different organizations, all of them chaired by David Brock, that are operating in one office space in Washington, D.C. And one of them in particular was a super PAC called Correct the Record, which was devoted to correcting Hillary Clinton's record online. And a lot of the pro-Hillary Clinton comments that we were seeing during the election were not authentic thoughts. Rather, they were essentially paid shills for Correct the Record that were going online and just posting flattering comments about Hillary Clinton, and they were getting, you know, essentially paid per post.
All right. Wow. All right. Should we go through the 14 different entities out of the same address, or is that just...
The really interesting thing is how they all, looking at their mission statement, they all align to a specific progressive cause. So we have Media Matters for America that corrects conservative misinformation in the media. We have American Bridge 21st Century that hires trackers to catch prominent Republican politicians on the campaign trail and gaffes, and so to, you know, fact-check conservative politicians. We have Correct the Record, correct conservative opinions on the internet. We have the Franklin Education Forum, which is an organization devoted to training progressive media pundits and politicians to help them spread the message. And we have the, this is my favorite one, the Center for Ethics and Responsibility in Washington, D.C., which essentially just produces lawsuits against conservative organizations. So they have everything covered.
We've got the t-shirt for that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so all of these organizations that you found under this umbrella, they're all involved in revising reality, revising the narrative, I should say, massaging the conversation or pushing the conversation toward a specific agenda, I guess you'd say that. But fact correcting, that's really not fact correcting. It's just changing and revising the reality as opposed to anything else.
Yeah, and that was a big motivation for me to kind of go on a crusade against these organizations, because it's okay to, it's part of a healthy democracy to be able to go onto a forum and express your opinions about a political candidate, even if it disagrees with our own. But the way that I consume media, I know throughout college and, you know, when I didn't devote my full-time efforts towards reporting, was that I would read the article and then I'd go into the comment section and see what people were commenting about the article. And as somebody that didn't have all day to devote towards, you know, coming up with opinion, reading what other people were authentically posting, their thoughts on what I just read, would help me solidify my stances on those topics. So The danger of an organization like Correct the Record, in my opinion, is that people were reading news articles and go into the comment section in an effort to see what other people were thinking about what they had just read, and they were being inundated with pro-Hillary Clinton comments. And so they were thinking that, wow, Hillary Clinton has this in the bag. And so they were so shocked when she lost the election. But that's because a lot of people were not reading authentic thoughts. They were reading inauthentic thoughts from people that were being paid to post those comments. And there is no disclaimer on internet communications that, hey, this is a super PAC communication paid by a super PAC. So it's very deceiving. And I don't think that's fair, and I don't think it's healthy towards a democracy. I think it's actually dangerous towards a democracy to trick people in this sort of way. The internet is the kind of the last bastion for free speech that we have, and it's, you know, just being poisoned by actions like this.
Wow.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When on internet forums and articles, I love reading through the comment section myself, and I do that constantly. And there was a huge disconnect and gap between what online polls were saying and what the majority of commenters and people on social media were saying versus what the mainstream media polls and people were saying. You know, Hillary's going to win in a landslide, and We saw that in the amount of support Trump got at his events versus what Clinton would get. I mean, she was photoshopping pictures of crowd audiences, and you know, they were struggling to get hundreds, you know, maybe 1,000 people to different events while Trump was filling up arenas, and the media would not acknowledge the support that Trump was getting. And you're right, it is very deceiving, especially when coming from super PACs being put out as articles looking like news stories. I mean, you want to talk about fake news, paying people to say something that coincides with what you think or you believe. I mean, that, and then disseminating as if it is an original thought, as you said, is definitely very deceiving. And the people were shocked that Hillary lost. Her supporters were shocked because they were told the whole time that she was, you know, it was basically over before it started.
Yeah, and to advocate for them, it's not really fair that they had to deal with Brock's antics that tricked them like this. If they knew the reality of the situation, like, I think that, you know, me personally, I knew that Trump had it in the bag quite some time ago. But how can you properly, you know, engage your voter base if they think that you have this in the bag? Personally, I'm glad that it worked out the way that it did, but I don't see how anybody could be supportive of actions like this. What worries me moving forward is that they are learning their lessons from their failures this election season. David Brock has a meeting with a bunch of high-profile donors that he's flying into a Miami beach house on inauguration week to discuss strategy moving forward. I don't think that they're going to change what they're doing, but they're going to change their tactics so that they're much more effective moving forward and pushing this message to where it won't be so painfully obvious for the observers out there that, you know, noticing this disconnect, they're going to be much more subtle about it. And I think that that's they need to be called out in their actions and be held accountable for what they did before they can you know, try it again in 2018 or 2020.
And I've said that I've constantly said that here on this program, where the objectives of the people in power, they don't change. Their plans change because of the events, and then they exploit whatever events they need to exploit and change their plans accordingly. So that's a very interesting observation. So we're looking at this post-truth, what the Oxford Dictionary, their word of the year is post-truth. And it's a compound word, and of course it's an artifact of the fake news narrative. This is all of this kind of meshes together, doesn't it? The fake news and the post-truth, and then the Brock strategy meeting and the meeting of the globalists going forward. We're at war here. And I will say this. Let me, for those joining you late, we're talking with Andrew Kerr. His website is thecitizensaudit.com. I don't enunciate well sometimes. thecitizensaudit.com. And their mission statement, Joe, I was reading it earlier today, is to prove that regular Americans like you and I and all of us listening, we've got the power to hold their government accountable through unapologetic use of our First Amendment right to free press. We will fulfill this mission by producing original research and insightful reporting on the critical issues of our time. And this gentleman does exactly that, and I want to thank him for that. But this is all kind of everything we're seeing here is kind of meshing together, I believe.
Yeah, Mr. Kerr, if I can ask you this about fake news. Do you think that this story, the title Fake News, was something that was in the works, regardless of, I think, and I'll just give you my opinion, then I'll ask the question, that the fake news was something that Hillary was going to launch after she won the election. And I think it was rolled out in a different way after Trump won. And now they're using it to, you know, go after, they were going to use it regardless to go after the Pizzagate story. But now they're using it as a narrative of why she lost the election, because fake news has such a huge influence on, you know, Hillary Clinton, apparently. When most of the fake news comes from the mainstream media, and they were for Hillary Clinton. But do you think that this fake news narrative was something that Hillary was going to use if she did get into office?
It's hard to tell. What I can say is that if you look at Google Trends, you know, the search, the trending of search terms, that fake news spiked immediately after the election. Fake news was not an issue in the news media when we were being inundated with WikiLeaks emails every day, but now WikiLeaks is being labeled as fake news. But it wasn't a thing until after Donald Trump won the election, and everybody's, you know, all up in arms about the supposed dangers of fake news.
Wow.
So,
okay. So it started trending after the election, right after the election.
Almost immediately after the election. It's actually quite shocking to see. I mean, it spikes right up.
Well, your background is in computer science, and you're very intelligent with respect to computers, and I'm sure analytics and trends and everything. I'm a dinosaur when it comes to any of this. I don't get any of this. However, you do. So, I guess I know we're kind of all over the place here so far, kind of coming out of the gate. But let me ask this. We are seeing, at least in my view, some sort of censorship via the keywords, the tags, whatever they call that, the metadata, all of the search engines are censoring the nukes. This appears to be an effective weapon, or is it? I mean, what are we seeing here? What's taking place?
Well, yeah, that's. I'm glad that you asked this, and I didn't expect we're going to be talking about it, but I'm happy to talk about it. After the election, the circular firing squad formed, and everybody was blaming everybody on the left. And one of the targets was Facebook. They're saying, "Oh, Mark Zuckerberg, your website was peddling fake news all throughout the election. You have to fix this." The only way that the recommendation was to create an algorithm to somehow search for fake news, and make it so it doesn't show up on people's timelines, or I guess that's what they're asking for. And on the surface level, to do that, yeah, you would have to analyze the text of the article, and if it, you know, matches the requirements of an acceptable article, then let it through. If it doesn't match the requirements, then block it. But just think about how ridiculous that is. How are you going to have a computer algorithm go through and verify the truthiness of an article? I mean, that's such a monumental task to be able to have Facebook data mine all the data on the internet to verify that if a news story is true or not. I think just on a very high level, yeah, you'd have to, you know, search for keywords and on these articles and start blocking the articles that way. It's very concerning for me, this whole fake news narrative. And I think that there's always going to be fake news coming about in the mainstream media and the fringe media with people running blogs. The only way to combat it is to be outward with it. And I think that a lot of, if you want to call it conspiracy theories, they form in echo chambers, and they get, these theories get kind of crazy inside the echo chamber. And when they get big enough to escape the echo chamber and other people start looking at it, they're like, wow, this is insane. But if there wasn't such an echo chamber with our news, Facebook shows us things that we want to look at. If you are conservative, Facebook is going to give you conservative news sources. You're not going to get a lot of liberal sites your way because you're not going to click on them, and they get paid by clicks. Same way for liberals. They're going the other way. They're just not going to see any of that conservative news based on these algorithms. But if, they actually lighten up on these algorithms and just, showed what was trending without any sort of, bias, then more people would be aware of what people are talking about, and it would start that conversation. I think that the only way to combat fake news is to be more open and open up channels to see what people are talking about, not try to lock down channels. Instead of responding to the allegations about Pizzagate, they're just calling it fake news. And that's creating the opposite effect with what they want. They want to bury the story. Every time they try to bury the story without responding to the allegations, they're just more motivating more people to look into the story. It's achieving the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why after somebody with a gun comes in and fires a shot reportedly earlier this week, thankfully nobody was hurt, but why they're still just completely ignoring all these allegations after that just is mind-boggling to me. And of course people are going to continue digging because that's just strange that they're going to this sort of length in order to bury a story. So,
yeah, you're right. And by not addressing any, I mean, they will write debunked or you know, fake news next to the articles,
I'll,
but
like
they
the
won't offer any proof,
one.
Evidence, or facts in the articles that one, address the claims, or two, offer any, you know, evidence that dispute the facts. They just claim it is fake. They just claim it is, you know, some outrage. I mean, Stephen Colbert talked about, you know, the Pizzagate scandal, and he compared it to, you know, he was making jokes about, you know, conspiracy theorists and aliens, you know, coming and laying eggs in your brain, and just, you know, way out in left field. And it does make people want to dig deeper, especially people who have already have an idea of what's going on. And I think this election cycle, the media and the media bias really woke a lot of people up to start doing and looking independently. You know, they'd see something that the media would report, and then they would go do their own research and find that it was just a complete fabrication and not true. And that woke a lot of people up to what the media is doing and did during this election cycle. And I think that was a main factor in why Trump won the election, was his ability to counter the media bias, where other Republicans in the past, from Romney to McCain, weren't able to do before. Folks, we're talking with Andrew Kerr. We're up against a break. We'll be right back after these few short messages. And when we do, we're going to continue to talk about the super PACs, the Clinton Foundation, and how money was funneled out of into private accounts and nonprofit NGOs from the super PAC.
It's Investigations 101.
CitizensAudit.com.
Follow the money. Sorry. Yeah.
We keep getting sound jumps in our headset.
Yep.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Hagman and Hagman Report. We've got such a great, what a great guest. Andrew Kerr. He's an investigative reporter. His website, the Citizens Audit, plural, that's thecitizensaudit.com. And it's a noble cause, and he's making some great inroads into the investigations he's conducting. He's, of course, they're tasked with producing original research about pressing issues in the news. And if you go to thecitizensaudit.com, if you go there, of course there's the page with the current updated news, but on the research tab it's the basis, and from that the outgrowth of the new articles, or the outgrowth, but we're going to be hitting all of these points, because all of these are so important. What he's uncovered is critical to all of the investigations we've been talking about. It's critical to Pizzagate. It's critical to the Clinton Foundation and Hillary and her activities. It's critical to the corruption inside the Beltway.
Very critical.
Yeah. And he really does a great job of tying, of connecting some of the dots.
From the campaigns to super PACs to media outlets.
Exactly. Now, before we get back to Mr. Kerr, I want to mention that Texas Ready is, they've got the best seed banks in the world. If you're in the market for a seed bank, there's only one place I recommend. That's TexasReady.net. TexasReady.net. And if you're not in the market for a seed bank, you should be. Okay. TexasReady.net, their seed banks contain regionally appropriate open pollinated heirloom seeds. Now, most seed banks, they don't take into account geographical differences. They do. And, of course, TexasReady.net, they use certified seeds. And if you don't know how to garden, Texas Ready has several excellent, absolutely wonderful reference books that help you grow plenty of nutrient-dense food. Start plants from seedlings, save seeds correctly, and protect the genetics. So you don't inadvertently create hybrids from your heirloom plants. That's an important point, and I was reading the other day in the book about that, and I didn't know there's a science to this. And TexasReady.net will guide you through it. Lucinda Bailey, the seed lady, she really knows her seeds. She really knows what she's doing. If you buy the TexasReady.net of seed bank, you'll be getting not just the seeds, but the expertise behind it. And Texas Ready Seeds, they come in a refurbished U.S. Army ammo can, and they've got the moisture seals on top. They're like tanks. It's an amazing product, and we only offer the best to our listeners. TexasReady.net is the best. They offer 80-plus varieties of vegetables and fruits, including 8 dual-purpose herbs for culinary and medicinal purposes. And again, the larger banks come with training manuals, which teach you to garden properly. The only place for seeds, in my view, TexasReady.net. That's TexasReady.net. TexasReady.net. Getting back to Andrew Kerr. Joe, I'll kick it to you, because the active project he's got on...
Yeah.
His website, thecitizensaudit.com. And by the way, folks, his work is worth every penny that, if you want to support a good cause, this is a good cause, because he's making some tremendous investigative inroads into the issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to try this again. I want to thank Bill McIntosh from OKSO Media. OKSO Media, Bill McIntosh, thank you. But yes, under the research tab on the citizensaudit.com page is the active project, and it talks about campaign finance violations in the 2016 election brought on by the Clinton campaign. And you state that the goal for this project is to force an official audit on David Brock's Media Matters conglomerate. And then you go to piece together so much of the evidence. And one of the stories I was looking at on your site, and I guess we can start here. I didn't know this at the time, but the Media Matters leaked the Trump nomination speech back in, July.
Wait a minute, the nomination speech?
Yeah, after the primaries. And this is in direct violation of their tax-exempt status as a 501c3 organization. And nothing came of this. How did you get your hands on this information? Were you... And why did this, not make it into the news cycle? And why were these people not held accountable?
This was from the DC Leaks database, and I almost overlooked it myself. But we were speaking in the prior section that there's 14 organizations that are present in the Media Matters office. So, I refer to them as just the Media Matters conglomerate. They're just a pieces of a larger system of organizations. But yeah, so back in July, July 21st, just hours before Donald Trump's convention speech, it was reported that Correct the Record Super PAC, one of those organizations that shares office space with Media Matters, had obtained and distributed Trump's planned remarks to the press corps. But this email that I found in the DC Leaks database shows that Correct the Record wasn't the only organization to distribute these messages. And this is really subtle, but it was Bradley Baycock, the president of Media Matters for America, who sent an email to Christina Reynolds, Clinton's deputy communications director, with the email just titled FYI, you guys might have already gotten your hands on this already, and attached was the transcript of for his speech just coming up in a few hours. And that was sent to Christina Reynolds sometime before 4:44, because the email chain shows that she then forwarded that out at 4:44 to a distribution list at HillaryClinton.com. And then shortly afterwards, it was forwarded to some more contacts, including Huma Abedin. So it's very critical, the timing, especially when we consider that Politico reported on July 21st, that Trump's leaked transcript began circulating in political and journalism circles soon after 5 p.m. But Media Matters provide the transcripts to the Clinton campaign sometime before 4:44 p.m. So yeah, 15-20 minute difference, who cares? But when you got your hands on your political opponent's convention speech and you have that extra 20 minutes to come up with messaging and response, every second is critical. And Media Matters, by directly emailing the Clinton campaign with that transcript, provided them with that advantage. IRS regulations state, and this is a quote, all Section 501c3 organizations, which Media Matters is, are absolutely prohibited from directly participating in any political campaign, and that violations may result in denial or revocation of tax-exempt status, and the imposition of certain excise taxes. So Media Matters, directly reaching out to their deputy communications director with her opponent's political speech, in my opinion, counts as a direct participation in a political campaign. IRS regulations further state that there are some loopholes in terms of a 501c3 working with a political campaign, and that they need to provide the same opportunity to both political campaigns. So if they're running a charity, I think a good example would be the charity dinner in New York they both attended. Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were there, so that organization gave them equal opportunity. But leaking an opponent's speech to the other political candidate, that's not equal opportunity. That's a clear advantage to one candidate. And IRS regulations, they're very clear. It says you cannot participate in a political campaign during an election year. If you do, your tax-exempt status is liable to be revoked. So now it's out there. I believe I'm the first person to report on this specific email. It's out there, and it's pretty simple. I don't know how the IRS can you know, put off auditing Media Matters. Despite everything else I put on my website, I think this is the strongest argument to have.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you call selective enforcement, if we've ever seen it. But yet, we still see the IRS going after, you know, Tea Party and conservative groups. And but this, you know, don't look at this, because they don't ever want to have to do anything. The Media Matters being a big organization run by George Soros. And
yeah, and just for people that may not know, Media Matters was established in May of 2004. It's described as, or describes itself as, a web-based, not-for-profit, progressive research information center dedicated to comprehensively monitoring, analyzing, correcting, no less, conservative misinformation in the media, throughout the media. And such misinformation, by the way, includes news or commentary that is not accurate, reliable, or credible, that forwards or advances the conservative agenda. In other words, fighting fake news, which really, Andrew Kerr, who is our guest here, from the citizensaudit.com website, the founder and director of the citizensaudit.com website, is of course investigating. And it's interesting. And Joe, I think you said it best. It's, you know, massaging the narrative. And of course, Andrew is, that's one finding there. And of course, David Brock is behind Media Matters as well. When I say behind it, the visible face. And of course, you've got George Soros and John Podesta, Democratic Party, Obama, all at the periphery. Did I cover that well, Andrew, or is there more to Media Matters?
Yeah, no, George Soros is a big donor, reportedly donated over $1 million to Media Matters. John Podesta collected a paycheck from them, I believe, in 2012. I may be wrong on that. Media Matters actually visited the White House weekly strategy meetings back in 2012, it was reported.
Man.
They're all connected.
Okay. All right.
Well, I guess let's get into the number one on your list under the research tab on your website, thecitizensaudit.com. Clinton campaign illegally purchased research from pro-Democratic super PAC. And I kind of want to get into some of the super PAC stuff that you have. And this is one of the stories and one of the areas that you focus on. If you don't mind, you want to explain what a super PAC is? I guess it's a political action committee,
right,
that raises money. And I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that. Go ahead.
Yeah, on my site, I actually have a two-part explainer on super PACs, but I don't really go into, you know, any violations, just kind of explaining what a super PAC is, because they're confusing. And, you know, if we don't know what something is, then it's kind of hard to, you know, really care about a specific violation. So, yeah, a super PAC is an independent expenditure-only committee. That's their official name. So they cannot coordinate expenditures with a political campaign. There needs to be a... You know, a good way to look at it is that, you know, a super PAC and a political campaign, they need to be running in parallel. They can't cross. They can't share internal strategy. You know, a political campaign can't contact a super PAC and say, hey, we're going to be pushing this policy next week. Prepare a bunch of material to play right after our speech. That's illegal, because that's, you know, providing, that's a coordination. And the whole name of the game with a super PAC is that you can't coordinate. If I have a lot of money and I really like a political candidate and I want to support them with more than, $2,000 donation per year, then, the reason why we have super PACs, as decided in the 2010 Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, that we hear a lot about. But, the argument was that I should be able to support the candidate that I want as long as I don't communicate with them at all. It should be completely separate. And then, no holds barred. I can do whatever I want. I can spend how much money I want. I can't, for whatever reason, directly coordinate with the political campaign. But what we're seeing here is that there's a lot of instances where the Clinton campaign was, coordinating directly with, these super PACs that David Brock is running. Either sharing employees, purchasing research, or just a whole slew of coordination that was giving her an unfair and undemocratic advantage during the election. Because regardless of your feelings on super PACs, they weren't following the rules in place. And the rules are already extremely lax. So that, it's blatant at this point.
And folks who are listening to us, go to thecitizensaudit.com. Once you're there, on the right-hand side at the top, go under the resource category, and you can click number one. And I want people who are listening to follow along with this because, you mentioned, was it Al Capone, and his arrest for tax evasion. That's what they got him on, despite the murders and all the other criminal activity and how that was kind of boring. But, and he ended up dying in jail. And you have, when pertaining to this article, you have, straight from the FEC's website, proof that the Clinton campaign coordinated and actually gave money to a super PAC for services of what was the services for
the
American Bridge 21st Century for Research Services for over $20,000. And this is a direct violation of super PAC rules?
Yeah, well, if there is a loophole that explains this, I think that goes out of the wayside. When I looked into the metadata for this specific transaction. And I was trying to figure out how did this go through, because it's a receipt that's posted that both of these organizations reported on, a $22,000 disbursement from the Hillary Clinton campaign to American Bridge 21st Century for research services. And then American Bridge 21st Century recorded that receipt that they had obtained that money from the Clinton campaign. And so that's a political campaign sending money to a super PAC, and I think to myself that super PACs can't coordinate with a political campaign. How did this go through? Is there any loophole that they used or what? And so I found on the Federal Election Commission's website, there's actually 25 data fields for every transaction that's submitted to the FEC, but publicly only about half of those are actually displayed. And when I found this specific transaction, I found something really interesting. Is that the Clinton campaign, when they logged this payment to the super PAC on line 21 on the entity type, they claimed that they were paying to an organization that's not a committee and not a person. Now they have the option to select that they're paying to a PAC or a political action committee, which American Bridge 21st Century is. So they fudged the receipt. And I think that, there must be some system in place at the FEC to flag any transaction from a political committee to a political committee so they can look into that further. But they probably didn't even have the opportunity to look at this specific transaction because the Clinton campaign improperly logged this as a payment to a non-political committee, which is just totally false. So it just kind of diverted the safeguards in place, in the system. That's the only explanation I have for this. And that's why I titled this as an illegal purchase, because of that discrepancy. It looks very intentional. American Bridge 21st Century, they have a political action committee ID with the FEC. How can they get away with saying that they're not a political organization apart from trying to fudge the transaction? At the very least, like everything that I'm putting out, I believe we deserve to get a response from these organizations. They influenced opinions during our public elections, and they should be held accountable for the things that they were doing. I think it's only fair.
And people would say, at this point, as Donald Trump is the winner of the election, that, it's in bad taste, and, you got to leave the Clintons alone. The election's over. You can't go after them. This is, now you're getting into territory of, you know, political persecution and whatnot. But this stuff is very important. And in order for, I mean, can you imagine, one, if Trump was found to do, I mean, even half these things in his campaign, how much the media would have plastered this all over in the press and radio and TV, one. And then, two, I believe they would have went after him legally, no doubt about it, if they had the opportunity to. But because it's Hillary Clinton and she is a career criminal when it comes to these matters, from the Clinton Foundation and, you know, the Haiti Earthquake Relief Fund back to Benghazi, I mean, her whole career is a criminal, from what I can tell, in her husband's career. But this, I mean, it's just all these things that are, they're not really little, but in order to run a fair election, these things have to be weeded out and stopped. And yep. the there is no corrective measures being taken to make sure that stuff like this doesn't happen again. And yep. You know, we continue to go through this laundry list of things, from, you know, the IRS and media matters and nobody being held accountable there, to now the Clinton campaign illegally coordinated with a super PAC and doing so under deceitful measures. And I see under line 21, they're listing it as an organization, not a committee or a person. So they intentionally tried to deceive themselves. Also, they tried to deceive the from their own records. And how could you? I mean, from what Comey said, there's no intent here. This shows intent.
Yeah. And what Andrew Kerr said, too, is enough. Media Matters directly participated in the political campaign. They no longer deserve to be recognized as a tax-exempt organization. At the very least, they should be held liable for back taxes for all of 2015. But there's more that should be done, obviously, as well. You've got a petition to the Department of Justice in addition to that.
Yes.
To audit Media Matters.
Yeah. Back to the super PAC here, what you lay out is you say that American Bridge 21st Century, the Clinton campaign lied to the FEC by deliberately reporting this transaction as not yep. a political committee but an organization, and that the Clinton campaign, this should have been flagged, as you already stated, and that and what they did, this has gone unnoticed for over a year now. And nobody's been held accountable still. And I guess I can summarize this question for everything that you talk about tonight. Do you expect, or do you see a point where we can hope for any indictments or results to come from your investigations and illegalities that you found and pointed out in your research?
Well, there's a quote from Thomas Jefferson where he says that the foundation for I'm messing this up, but like a competent electorate is, is education, for people to be aware of what's actually happening. So if people don't know what's happening, then how are they going to care about it? How are they going to make noise about it? I had the opportunity to, when I first started posting this research, I got some questions saying that, hey, why didn't you just, submit, a document to the IRS, he could have cashed in. There's like a 30% bounty or something like that. But it was just one voice coming forward and saying, with evidence, with facts, that can really easily be buried. But if a lot of people are making noise about something, then it becomes harder and harder to ignore what's happening. And I believe that the argument that I'm putting forward, it's fact-based. It's numbers. I'm using data that the organizations and questions themselves submitted. And I think that if enough people make noise, it will just get to a point where the government can't ignore this anymore. If they want to claim that, the IRS has claimed all throughout the Obama administration that they're not a partisan organization, that they treat everybody equally. But I've had the opportunity to talk with people who have experience running super PACs, and they said that we would never dream of doing any of the things that you're uncovering here. Even to make it look, if there is an appearance that they were coordinating with the political campaign, one individual told me that he'd be scared of going to bed at night for fear of federal prosecution. That's the conservative side, what the type of scrutiny that they're placed on. But we see here, this time after time, questionable transactions or, downright illegal fudging the books, but nothing. They just, you know, completely overlooked all the organizations on the left. And I'll be honest, if Donald Trump was doing this stuff, or if Donald Trump super PACs were doing things like this, I'd be going after them just as hard. I believe that people should be, in America, there's one set of rules, and I don't care who you are, you should be held accountable to the same set of rules. It's the only way to ensure that we have a fair and just society. And it just, it really drives me to see that one side of the political aisle gets so much scrutiny, and the other side of the political aisle just gets nothing. It's not fair. This isn't a left or a right issue. It's just a fairness issue, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and unfortunately, most things are, in Washington, D.C., are politicized, and it's not about, you know, it's about money and politics and influence and power, and instead of what's right and what's wrong. It seems to have gone out the window a long time ago in D.C. And we got just about 2 minutes till the break, but on the other side, I want to get into the back to David Brock and the paper trails he has left.
Very good.
From
yeah.
the Democratic super PACs disseminating funds to as many as five nonprofit organizations and NGOs.
Yes.
And activity tied directly back to the Clinton Foundation.
And the Clinton Foundation seems to be at the epicenter of a lot of things, doesn't it, Mr. Kerr? I mean, it's.
Yeah. And in particular, the fundraiser that we'll be getting into, the Bonner Group. That's raising funds for Brock's group.
Yes.
They're all over WikiLeaks emails. They actually fundraised for the Clinton Foundation. They didn't collect any payments, so that's why they didn't show up on the Clinton Foundation's tax return documents. But yeah, the moneymakers are, you know, working for the Clinton Foundation and as well as for Brock's organization.
So you've got, just to be clear, you've got information on the Bonner Group, correct? About how it ties into things?
Yes.
Okay. Because we have gotten so many emails from our listeners asking us to have somebody on to talk about the Bonner Group and how it fits into ties into the Clinton Foundation and other recent events. So I'm glad that you're.
Well, the Bonner Group is my brainchild. That's the first bit of research I put out starting in early July. So that can all be drawn back to me.
Okay. Because there will be a mutiny if we don't allow you to talk about that or have you talk about that, the Bonner Group. And folks, this is important stuff tonight. Andrew Kerr is our guest. His website, thecitizensaudit.com. Excellent research. And of course, Mr. Kerr is an IT specialist, but he's in data management analytics building, off a degree in computer science. But let me tell you, the investigations he has conducted, the research he has conducted.
Check out citizensaudit.com.
Yeah.
There is a great, it's put together very nicely for people to go through and even follow along as we do the show, but to go back through by category or by topic, and you can read these stories, see the records. He puts the screenshots of a lot of the records right in the articles, which makes it, along with the hyperlinks, which makes it very easy to go through. And there's a lot of, I mean, it's very important information here. Basically how the Clinton campaign worked as a criminal organization and was left unchecked even after the election and the proof have come out. We'll be right back after these short messages with Andrew Kerr, for our third and final hour. Stay with us.